News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day today. Whether you're listening live here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620 on Saturday afternoon, or you're listening to the podcast version of this show anytime you like, anywhere you get your podcasts, we hope to make your day a little bit better by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. Joining me to do so this week, as he does so very often on the show, please welcome Jeremy Branch.
Look, I gotta confess before we even get into this episode that we've been working on for quite a while now. We've been ranking different genres, and we're going to be doing that on this episode. I gotta admit, it's very, very challenging to reconcile both of our different tastes. And in addition to that, ranking art in general makes me die a little bit inside, Julio.
Well, that's fair. I mean, you know, There's no such thing as a scientific list as far as, you know, when you're coming to ranking art. I mean, you can rank things like sales and, you know, airplay and things like that in the Billboard charts and things like that, whatever. But even that isn't necessarily the test of the longevity of a song or a movie or whatever. You know, how many classic movies bombed at the box office? How many great songs weren't top 40 hits, but that we still hear regularly 40, 50 years later? You know, so I think doing these is kind of an attempt to kind of bring those things back to light. But yeah, it's in no way scientific. And, you know, we're looking at this list, you know, we've done a couple others of these. If you haven't listened already, wherever you get your podcasts, you can go back and listen to. We started with our top 25 horror movies of the past 25 years. We also did our top 25 superhero movies of the past 25 years. So we're doing a series of these. I'm hoping to get to a few other genres before the end of the year, since it makes sense for 25 and 25. This week we're going to be doing our top 25 sci-fi movies of the past 25 years. And
how do we come to the list, so they know?
Yeah, so Jeremy and I each independently come up with a list. Then we compare our lists. We take anything that we matched up on, and that automatically moves to the top of the pile.
So, for example, Julio and I both had 5 movies in common. Those would immediately become the top 5, at which point we would kind of discuss and rank them. If he and I would have had 10 in common, that would have been the initial or the top 10 and so on.
Yeah, in the case of this particular list, we had 17 films that we were in common on. So that makes
not bad.
Our top 17. And then from there, we kind of trade off. And in fairness to Jeremy here, he actually deferred to me on a couple. So this one's weighted a little heavier towards my picks, although I don't think I picked anything that you were just like, oh, no, that wasn't very good.
No, absolutely not. However, 2 of my absolute favorites are movies that you don't care for, which is challenging.
There are movies that would not have been in my personal top 25. I wouldn't say that I don't care for them at all. I wouldn't say they're bad. If I felt really strongly about it, I'd have fought you on it. But they're not movies that, like, if it was just me making this list, that would have been in the list. But we'll get to those movies as we go along. So we're going to start with number 25. And this is actually an interesting movie because it's kind of a sequel to another movie on the list, but it kind of isn't. It's this whole, I guess you could say it's become a franchise now because there's been 3 films. But they're so loosely interrelated that it's weird to even call it a franchise. But the film is 10 Cloverfield Lane. Again, you know, let's talk for a second about Cloverfield as a franchise.
Do we have to?
I mean, do you think it is?
It is, because they said it is. But you know that they're like so tangentially related that if they weren't called Cloverfield, there would almost be nothing in common between them.
Well, yeah, and this particular film is really, you know, the tie-in is at the very end of the film. And the whole strength of this movie is the suspense of whether there was actually some kind of disaster that happened outside of this basically fallout shelter that three that three people are locked into for the course of this movie. The leads being John Goodman and Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who are both incredible in this movie. Just the performances are what makes this movie. And it's the tension of Mary Elizabeth Winstead's character was knocked unconscious in an accident. She wakes up in this shelter. She finds herself in there with John Goodman, and he's told her that there's been this disaster outside and she can't leave. And is that true or not? And that's where this movie really gets its oomph.
Yeah, yeah, it is an exceptional psychological thriller with science fiction undertones that eventually reveal themselves at the end of it. But yeah, as far as a chamber piece with three lead primary performances, I think the other guy's name is John Gallagher Jr.
I believe you're right.
And all three of them are great.
Yeah, we won't spoil over whether it's true or not. If you haven't seen this movie, definitely go see it. It's a fantastic film from... Dan Trachtenberg, who's gone on to do some other interesting stuff lately. Moving on to number 24, this is Annihilation. First of two films by Alex Gardner that we're going to be talking about in this. Garland. I'm sorry. I misspoke. Who is also the creator of the 28 Days Later franchise. He wrote those films that were directed by Danny Boyle. Maybe talking about Danny Boyle a little later, too. But this is his second film as a director, starring Natalie Portman, and it is about an interdimensional invasion in this part of the world. Actually, if you pay close attention
close to our backyard.
Yeah, if you pay close attention to this film, it actually does take place in the Florida Panhandle. They don't spell it out. You have to watch the cues here. But this is just a really dark and twisted film that really requires you to pay attention. You've got, this is not a movie that you can turn on in the background and turn your brain off. This is cerebral sci-fi that you really have to pay attention to if you're going to follow it. Not only that,
it's got one of the scariest standout scenes that has been released in the past decade involving a mutated bear.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That incredible effects of this and incredible storytelling. And again, led by a great performance by Natalie Portman. Fantastic film.
Mm-hmm.
Number 23, moving on, as first of, I think, two Christopher Nolan films we're going to be discussing today. A lot of repeat directors on this one. There's just, you know, some people that have done some really great sci-fi in the past 25 years, and they deserve more than one mention. And Christopher Nolan is certainly one of them. Interstellar. Now, this is for me a personal favorite. Like if this had been one we agreed upon, it would probably be way further up on the list, but it didn't quite make your list, Jeremy. But I think this movie is just fantastic, dealing with a group of astronauts that are heading off into space because Earth is dying. All the crops on the planet are dying, and they're trying to find a way to survive, for the human species to survive. And because of the time dilation effect, of course, they stay young while people on Earth are growing much faster. He leaves Earth with his daughter as a child, and by the time he's coming back, she's Bryce Dallas Howard. Great cast in this. McConaughey is fantastic in it. Anne Hathaway gets a little mind-bending in that kind of 2001 A Space Odyssey kind of way. This is definitely a movie that would not exist without 2001 A Space Odyssey. I'm curious why this didn't make your top 25, Jeremy.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different thinking that goes into these lists, and then a lot of places where I kind of contradict myself. If I were going to pick my favorite Christopher Nolan movie, it wouldn't be Interstellar, which is appropriate. You mentioned something that I thought was very poignant at the beginning, and that is that we're actually kind of trying to revive life into these by sharing movies that were enthusiastic, and that way people that are listening, they can go back and check them out. So that said, when I was thinking about the Nolan movies that could make my list, and then how heavily would they weight the list towards specifically Christopher Nolan, it just wasn't one that I ended up putting on there. And not because it's not good, because there is a version of this list where most of the top 10 are Christopher Nolan. And I think it's inarguably a brilliant film. It just wasn't one of my top three favorite Nolan films.
Okay, fair enough. Well, we've got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
classy in a breakfast mess. Yeah, 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 yeah. Let's play Twister, let's play Risk. Yeah, 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 yeah. I'll see you in heaven if you make the list. Yeah, 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 yeah. Now, Andy, did you hear about this one? Are you goofing on Elvis too, baby? Are we losing touch? If you believe they put a man on the moon, man on the moon. If you believe there's nothing up his sleeve, that nothing is cool.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line, and we are going through our list for the top 25 science fiction movies of the past 25 years. We kicked off with number 25, 10 Cloverfield Lane, number 24, Annihilation, number 23, Interstellar, and we are now up to number 22, which is Moon, filmed by Duncan Jones, who, if you don't know, is the son of David Bowie. Also directed the Warcraft movie that came out a couple years after that. This is the only one on the list, Jeremy, that I personally have not seen. This is one you picked, so I'm going to let you take this one.
Yeah, this was Duncan Jones' debut film, and it is just exceptional. And as far as being a good sci-fi yarn that is super compelling all the way through, thanks in large part to the fantastic performance of its star, Sam Rockwell. It's kind of a one-man show in that way, and it does some really interesting things with it. Duncan Jones went on to do a film called Source Code with Jake Gyllenhaal that was like a really good follow-up to this, but then unfortunately his career trajectory just didn't maintain the same kind of promise that it showed early on. But the less I say about the story of Moon, the better. But I will say it's one of those films that I think every sci-fi fan should check out.
Yeah, it's one that I've been meaning to get around to for quite some time, and just for one reason or the other, haven't quite gotten around to it yet. But never heard anything but great stuff about it. Moving on to number 21, we did not plan it this way; it just kind of happened. We go from Moon to Sunshine. This is from Danny Boyle, starring Cillian Murphy, as so many of Danny Boyle's movies seem to do. So many of Christopher Nolan's movies seem to do too, actually, now that I think about it. Also, Chris Evans in this, and just a really great cast. But this is about a mission to the sun, again, trying to save the planet from destruction. And some desperation plays that are going on in this film, and leading to, you know, as happens in some of these movies, some of the members of the crew experience some kind of psychosis. And just, it's a really thrilling movie with some really beautiful effects. It's a small film, but it looks like $10 gazillion, and it's just stunning. What do you think about this one, Jeremy?
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. And I think similar to 10 Cloverfield Lane, it kind of sits in that psychological thriller within sci-fi trappings. I think all the performances are really good, but it's kind of a chamber piece again, where everything's set within this spaceship. I'm a big fan of it. I should probably go back and watch it because I haven't seen it since it was released back in 07.
Yeah.
But I remember at the time just loving it.
And just to give the rest of the cast, you know, full credit, it's also Rose Byrne, Michelle Yeoh, Benedict Wong, fantastic cast. And some of these people,
Yuki Sonata, who gets trapped on a ship in Life as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, again, some people here that we may be hearing some more about, later in the show as well. Moving on to number 20, this is probably the film on this list where Jeremy and I most diverge in opinion, because I am just not as big on this series of movies as you are at all, Jeremy. But number 20 is Dune Part 2. I am not in any way saying that this is not a well-made film, or that, you know, that it doesn't necessarily belong, or that it's not an amazing technical achievement. It just, and maybe it's because of so much of the stuff that has been stolen from Dune over the years, because the original novels have been stolen from for so much from Star Wars on down. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I wonder if maybe that's part of it, but I just don't have the emotional resonance with this movie. It's not the fault of anybody involved with it. It's a great director, Denis Villeneuve. Again, a director we're going to be talking about more during the show. But this resonates with you way more than it does with me.
Yeah. You know, when we look at different genres, I think they serve different utilities within them. And I think the critique that you leveled just now against Dune could also be leveled against Christopher Nolan, and that is that their films are extremely cerebral and more about the intellectualizing of the material than something that you'll have a strong emotional connection to, which will tie into one of our later choices about Denis Villeneuve himself and how I think you view movies through a different lens always than everybody views movies through a different lens. But I think intellectually and conceptually, and then, like you said, by any technical metric, Dune is a absolute masterpiece.
Fair enough. Moving on to number 19, and this is a movie I think is really a masterpiece and that I think deserved more recognition than it got, although it did get a number of Oscar nominations, and I think it won the Golden Globe for Best Comedy or Musical, which is really stupid because it is neither, but that is The Martian. Directed by Ridley Scott, written by Drew Goddard, who also co-wrote and directed one of the movies that made our best horror movies of the past 25 years list, The Cabin in the Woods. This is, again, kind of an intimate film in a way, in that in a big portion of the film is kind of a one-hander with Matt Damon as an astronaut who's been stranded on Mars and is trying to survive long enough for a rescue to get to him. And the trials and tribulations, he's able to communicate with Earth, and he has, you know, conversation going back and forth. And there, you follow the team on Earth that's trying to get him back. It's Jessica Chastain and Kristen Wiig, Jeff Daniels, Michael Pena, Sean Bean, Sebastian Stan, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Kate Mara. It's a great cast overall, but it really all rests on Matt Damon's shoulders, and he just knocks this one out of the park. A really smart movie that really, you know, ends up with a lot of these movies are about survival, but this one has some hope to it. And that's one of the things I really like about it. Are you a fan of this one, Jeremy?
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said, it's a very human story and does, I think, resonate through the empathy lens. And Matt Damon is phenomenal in it. I'm glad it got the kind of notoriety and acclaim that it did, because it could have been another one of those movies that kind of slipped through the cracks, but I think it is well regarded, and for good reason.
It may very well be Ridley Scott's best movie this century. I think Gladiator's in that conversation because that came out in 2000. You know, Black Hawk Down is probably in that conversation, but I mean, it's up there for sure. Speaking of Ridley Scott, coming in at number 18 is a sequel to one of Ridley Scott's greatest films of all time. And that is Blade Runner 2049. Again, we're dipping into the Denis Villeneuve pool here. This is a film that he directed. This is another one. Like, I like Denis Villeneuve as a filmmaker a lot, but this one, again, just for me, it wouldn't have made my top 25. It's technically a brilliant film, but it just didn't resonate with me the way the original Blade Runner did.
Yeah. What I think is so kind of bold about Blade Runner 2049 is that it really is an art house movie masquerading as a franchise movie or a blockbuster. If you just live in the world and take it in as like a sensory experience, it is some of the most stunningly kind of composed science fiction imagery that I've ever seen, and something that carries through from the Blade Runner franchise to the Alien franchise. We're seeing a lot of it on Alien Earth. I love the existential questions that it poses about what it actually means to be human, and it does it really well. And Gosling plays that character really well. I'm such a big fan of this movie. If it were on my personal list, I really do think it would be, you know, top three.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, we're now getting into the territory of films that Jeremy and I both had on our lists. So number 17, Rogue One. Now, I will fully admit, like, it's weird because we both love franchise sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the only real, like, real franchise. I mean, there are some other things that you could really call franchises that we'll mention a little later on the list. But in the sense of the big sci-fi franchises, like, we didn't end up with a Star Trek movie on our list. We did not end up with an Alien movie on our list, a Predator movie, you know, some of these, you know, long-running big sci-fi franchises. And this is the only Star Wars movie that made our list, despite the fact that we've had, five Star Wars movies this century, I believe, so far. There was some, you know, I think there was some consideration between the two of us that, like, we had to have something from these big franchises in there. But this is, while this is a Star Wars movie, it is a Star Wars movie that stands alone. It's not part of the Skywalker saga. It has, you know, some characters that we've seen before, but for the most part, it concentrates on a group of characters we don't already know and who we, you know, spoiler alert for a movie that's what, like 10 years old at this point, you know, who don't survive.
Yeah.
And yet they bring hope.
I was going to say the same thing. You mentioned that about The Martian. And while there is a definite nihilism streak through Rogue One, due to the futility of this is basically a suicide mission, it's for a greater hope. And it also fed into and introduced us to one of the greatest characters and parts of the Star Wars universe that we've ever seen, with the creation of Andor on Disney Plus.
I thought you were going to say K2SO.
And K2SO.
Because K2SO is actually, all the characters in this movie are fantastic. It really is. If you only watch one Star Wars movie that came out this century, that's the one to watch. We've got to take a break. Yep. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line, and we are discussing our picks for the top 25 science fiction movies of the past 25 years. Once again, to give you a quick recap of where we are so far, number 25, 10 Cloverfield Lane. Number 24, Annihilation. Number 23, Interstellar. Number 22, Moon. Number 21, Sunshine. Number 20, Dune Part 2. Number 19, The Martian. Number 18, Blade Runner 2049. Number 17, Rogue One. And we are now at number 16, which is Mad Max Fury Road. This is a visual masterpiece. And that is the primary reason it is here. The story itself is very simple. It is this is really actually the fourth Mad Max film, if I'm remembering correctly. This is, in fairness, I said Star Wars was one of the only franchises. Mad Max is a franchise in the sense that we think of a franchise. It really is. But this movie kind of stood apart from franchises. It's the only Mad Max movie to be nominated for Best Picture. deservedly so, was nominated for something like 14 Oscars and won a boatload of them, and introduced us to this great character of Furiosa, played here by Charlize Theron, who eventually got her own prequel movie with a different actress playing Furiosa. But it is largely like a big, you know, cars versus cars war movie set across a post-apocalyptic wasteland. It's very simple, but it is beautiful and brilliant and action-packed. And I just love it. I only know one person that doesn't like this movie, and he's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Really saturated color palettes, which in the modern era of film is in itself pretty interesting. It's a beautifully choreographed movie. Like you said, it is kind of a car race from beginning to end, but the visual language just tells such a compelling and exciting story. It feels very, very singular, despite the fact that it is part of a franchise. And it kind of feels like the movie that Miller always wanted to make, but was just kind of held back by technological advancements that hadn't yet happened. It would be very difficult to improve on Mad Max, and while I do think, or on Fury Road, and while I think Furiosa was incredible and a solid attempt at doing so, I think there's something in simplicity that just made it exceptional.
Agreed. Speaking of exceptional, moving on to a movie that I think probably would have been higher on my personal list, but definitely belongs, and I'm glad it's here. And that is Everything Everywhere All at Once at number 15. This, of course, was a Best Picture winner, won multiple Oscars for the acting. Michelle Yeoh, Jamie Lee Curtis, and Ke-Huy Quan all taking home Oscars for their fantastic performances in this. And fair to say, this is the best multiverse project that has been done in cinemas, period. Like, put aside the superhero stuff. Put aside anything else like, you know, Sliding Doors, or there's been some other movies over the years that have dealt with the multiverse. But this just takes it to the next level. It's smart. It's funny. It's well-directed and well-written by the duo known as Daniels, who also won Best Screenplay. It won Best Director. It won Best Picture, you know, and deservedly so. I think it is easily one of the best movies of the past 25 years overall. And it's irreverent. But again, it has heart. And at the core of this is a story about family.
Yeah. On a previous episode, you and I were talking about Peacemaker and how the multiverse kind of served as a device to explore Chris Smith as a character. And I almost think that Everything Everywhere All at Once, it really is almost more symbolic than it has to be something that we're like physically experiencing. And for that reason, I think it really, really works because, like you said, there's a core of emotional connection between family at the end of it. And it's really freaking funny. And the choreography is awesome. It's a blast.
Yeah, I love this movie. I can't say enough good stuff about it. Number 14, we're returning to the Cloverfield franchise with the original movie Cloverfield. This movie, I think, was really innovative in a lot of ways. If not, you know, one of the earlier found footage movies. And I think that's kind of what made it interesting. You had this entire movie basically being shot by one of the characters who we very rarely see on screen. We hear his voice throughout the whole film, but very rarely seen on screen. And this is, you know, kind of a kaiju film. It is a giant monster. In this case, it appears to be, and they very much hedge the amount of knowledge they give you about what's going on here, because everything is seen from the point of view of, you know, this group of people that are on the street level. They're not the military. They're not, you know, scientific experts or anything. They're just a bunch of, you know, friends that were out at a party. And
yeah.
And then this kaiju attacks New York City. It is New York, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they're caught in the middle of it. And it's a really smart movie.
What if 9/11, but Godzilla?
Yeah. And this is Matthew Reeves, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Was this his first film?
It was.
Yeah. So, you know, gone on to do some other films. And I believe one other we're going to be talking about a little later here, as well as, you know, The Batman and some other great stuff. This is all, you know, the J.J. Abrams world, too. We haven't mentioned that name yet, but he is a big name in science fiction. And I think this is the only place we're mentioning him because none of his Star Trek films or Star Wars films made it. Also, Super 8 is another film we probably could have mentioned, which is a great film. But interestingly enough, nothing he directed ended up making our list. But yeah, it's a really solid film. And if you haven't seen it, if you have trouble with the found footage stuff, I get that. I do sometimes too. This movie did make me a little bit nauseous seeing it in theaters. I had to look off to the sides of the screen. Sometimes I get that motion sickness thing going. So be aware that that's a possibility, but it's worth soldiering through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Moving on to number 13. This might be the most obscure film on our list, I think, Jeremy. This is a British film that did not get a lot of play here in the States. But if you have not seen Attack the Block, seek this movie out. Really interesting film about kind of an alien invasion that takes place in the poorer neighborhoods of the UK and kind of what they call estate housing or council housing, you know, basically the projects.
Mm-hmm.
This group of young men led by a young man named John Boyega, who had gone to be very famous for some other stuff you may have heard of called, you know, three Star Wars movies, and and a young lady named who you may also have heard of called Jodie Whittaker, who went on to become famous as being Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's a sci-fi pedigree here. Also, Franz Drema in this, who ended up being one of the leads on the series of DC's Legends of Tomorrow, which was a lot of fun too. But this is it's a comedic film, but it's also like got a real horror edge to it. But it definitely with the alien invasion, I think it falls most into sci-fi. It's written and directed by a guy named Joe Cornish, and it's a really smart and funny film that I think you should check out if you have not checked it out.
Yeah, absolutely. It also establishes unlikely heroes, people that are not often depicted in mainstream films, becoming the heroes of the story.
Yeah, these guys are basically a gang. Yeah, these guys are basically a gang, you know?
Yeah.
And in fact, you know, when Jodie Whittaker's character first encounters them, she's afraid of them. And,
I mean, I think they're mugging her, right?
Yeah. I don't remember the details there, but they end up, you know, they end up being her guardians through this movie.
Uh-huh.
And really, really smart movie. Worth checking out. Speaking of smart movies worth checking out, number 12. It was hard to narrow this franchise down to one film, in fairness. And this is Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. The revived Planet of the Apes movies in this century have pretty much consistently at least been very good. So what is it you think elevates this one over the others?
It's meditative, and it allows the story to breathe. In previous Planet of the Apes films, audiences were kind of given the olive branch of the monkeys, or the apes, excuse me, are already advanced to the point that they're able to communicate in our own native language, which is convenient. In Matt Reeves' Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, we are living among a society of apes pre-evolution, but we understand their culture. We see the way they hunt. We see the way they live. It's almost like a nature documentary at first before the human characters even show up. And what I love about these movies is that they are just so fundamentally about revolution and not evolution, that's revolution. And I think it handles it really, really well. And while it would be easy to paint the humans as the bad guys of this story, it's always much more complex and nuanced than that. And I really appreciate that.
I just want to add too that it is just the ridiculous prejudice against motion capture acting that prevented Andy Serkis from an Oscar nomination for this film, which he should have gotten for playing Caesar. We've got to take a break. Back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line. We're talking about our list of the top 25 sci-fi movies of all time. I'm not going to do another recap here because we're running short and we want to make sure we get through the entire list here. So moving on to number 11, first of two films from director Bong Joon-ho that made the list, The Host. This is also the only film not in English that made our list. This is a Korean film. This is a kaiju film, but this is really about a father and daughter trying to stay together in the midst of a kaiju attack. But the kaiju is very sympathetic in this film, too. Jeremy, what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think The Host is absurdly funny. It was the first of Bong Joon-ho's films that I saw. And there was a movie theater here in, well, it was in Gulf Breeze. It was Gulf Breeze Cinemas, and they would play art house and international films. And my wife and I went and saw it. And I don't think either of us were expecting to just belly laugh as hard as we did at certain moments.
It's very satirical, too.
It is. And that's not to say that it's not serious and that there are no stakes in it, but it balances tones really well, which if you've seen Parasite or any of Bong Joon-ho's other films, you're kind of aware how he handles satire. And I highly recommend this one.
Yeah, he always has a lot to say in his films, which the best science fiction does. And that's part of why I think he has more than one movie on this list, too. Moving on to number 10. This was a surprise Best Picture Oscar nominee, but one that deserved it. But it's also the director who I think his career after this movie has been pretty wholly disappointing. And this is District 9.
Yeah.
I love this movie. I've seen it again recently. It holds up. It's a really interesting commentary on, he's again, South African director, South African star, Charlton Copley, and it is kind of a commentary on apartheid. It has to deal with aliens that have come to live on Earth, and they have been, ostracized and separated into camps. And their ploy to find acceptance is by turning a human into one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And Charlton Copley is the actor that has to deal with this. It's a great performance, and it's a great film. And I wish that Neil Blomkamp's career after this had been as impressive as this film has been.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Moving on to number 9, our newest film on the list. This film just came out earlier this year. This is Companion. And this is a film that I think has got some twists that I don't want to give away to you, but I don't think it's unfair to tell you that one of the lead characters is a robot and is meant to be a companion robot. In other words, basically a sex bot, a girlfriend bot, however you want to look at it. And it delves into the morality of that and the morality of these relationships and how things fall apart and how humans can be monsters.
Yeah. And as you said, the best sci-fi has something to say. I think a lot of the themes that this is exploring are very relevant today, as are the ones in District 9.
Yeah. And I think that's going to be kind of a recurring theme in the rest of the films on this list, too.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to number 8, this is the other Bong Joon-ho film that made the list, Snowpiercer. Now, there was a TV series that followed this. We're not talking about the TV series. We're talking only about the movie. This was Bong Joon-ho's first English language film. Has a great cast. Chris Evans showing up again on this list. Weird to think, because I think people think of him primarily as Captain America, but he's done a lot of other interesting stuff. This is about, again, a post-apocalyptic world where the survivors of Earth are huddled on this train that can't stop moving because they'll freeze to death if they do. And
the acid scene is incredible.
Yeah, it's in the haves and the have-nots. That is what this film is really about. The further up you are in the train, the more of a have you are, and the eventual rebellion amongst the have-nots that comes. If you can't read into some things that are going on in the world right now in this film, you're not really paying attention.
Vive la Revolution.
Yeah. Number 7, the only animated film to make our list. Just another brilliant, brilliant film, WALL-E. Just a gorgeous film, but again, a film that has a lot to say about things that are going on in our world currently. And it's very much about what can happen if we don't take care of the world around us, and what can happen if we don't take care of the humans on the earth around us. And it's all personified through this little garbage robot.
Pixar had a moment where they just came out swinging with the opening sequences of films. And I think the first, 30 minutes, the first act of WALL-E are just some of the most brilliant stuff ever filmed.
Fantastic film. I can't imagine there's too many people that haven't seen it, but if for some reason you haven't, seek it out. This is not just a kid's film. It's worth you seeing. Number six, our top kaiju film on the list, and really just easily one of the top films, period, of the past 25 years, not just sci-fi. And one of the top films in this long, long, long-running film franchise, maybe the best film in this long-running film franchise, Godzilla Minus One. With the possible exception of the original Godzilla, just the best Godzilla film there ever has been. It is very much about the post-World War II world in Japan and what happened to these people after, you know, they were decimated by the events of World War II, and what happened to the national consciousness, what happened to the individual people. And it's just masterfully made. It was made for not a lot of money, but it looks like $1 billion. It won the Academy Award for Best Special Effects over films that cost a lot more money than this one did to make.
I went and saw Shin Godzilla in 4K the other day, and you and I both discussed putting that one on the list as well. I think it's another great one, but yeah, I feel like Minus One is probably the greatest film in the history of the franchise.
It really is fantastic. Moving on to number five, Ex Machina. And again, if you want to talk about things that are timely, this film is about artificial intelligence. And when does artificial intelligence become a danger to the rest of us? And when does artificial intelligence possibly replace us? And it's all done through the lens of this this robot that's played by Alicia Vikander, and a created by this brilliant inventor played by Oscar Isaac. And he brings in a man to give her basically the Turing test, which is, you know, when you an artificial intelligence is indistinguishable from human, played by, I'm going to mess up his name, Domhnall Gleeson.
Paul Gleeson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kind of a three-hander primarily. There's one or two other characters in this. But again, rises and falls on some great performances and just some really thought-provoking material here.
Great dance sequence.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Number four, this is the top Denis Villeneuve movie on our list, and I think his best film. That is Arrival.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant film about aliens coming to Earth and humans trying to find a way to communicate with them, starring Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner. Brilliant performances. Amy Adams should have won the Oscar for this film and did not even get nominated. The film did get nominated for Best Picture. There was a number of nominations. Highly underrated movie despite that. Just really about finding the humanity in people other than yourself.
Really compelling movie about language.
Yes. And I love this movie so much. It's moving on to number three. This is our top film by Christopher Nolan on the list. Probably not going to be much of a surprise as to which film this is for people. This is Inception.
Yeah.
You know, putting aside the stunning visuals of this film, and that's hard to do because this may be Nolan's strongest film from a visual standpoint. Just the indelible images of the buildings collapsing into themselves and space folding into itself, and the fight sequences that are going on in kind of like this weird zero gravity dream world.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a movie that just keeps you thinking and keeps you guessing to the very end, literally to the last frame of the film.
Does it ever stop spinning is the question.
Yeah, and are we still in a dream world or are we in the real world? it's something that's going to be debated for ages to come. Moving on to number two, and this is a film that could have very easily been number one, but we just felt just a little bit more strongly about the film that we did place at number one. This is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, directed by Michel Gondry and written by the great Charlie Kaufman. A very smart film about the aftermath of a relationship and the invention of a device that will allow you to remove the memories of your ex. And is that a good idea? And does that work? The two leads in this film, played by Kate Winslet and Jim Carrey, are outstanding. Kate Winslet was nominated but did not win for the Academy Award. Jim Carrey was not nominated, which is possibly one of the biggest injustices in Oscar history. You forget you're watching Jim Carrey in this movie.
This is one of those quintessential hipster movies. Highly recommended. It's amazing.
It is, but it's more than that. There's so much heart to this movie. There's a great supporting cast with Elijah Wood and Kirsten Dunst and a few other actors. And it just has a lot to say about relationships and heart.
Mm-hmm.
The science fiction element is there. It may not be a film you think of as science fiction right away, but it absolutely is. It's a beautiful movie. Last but not least, obviously not least, because it is our number one, from director Alfonso Cuarón, Children of Men. This is a very near future movie. It is a very grim near future movie that, again, has a lot to say. It's about a society where people have stopped being able to give birth. And what happens when a very hardened man played by Clive Owen is assigned to protect what turns out to be a pregnant woman that is discovered after all of this.
Some incredible wonders in this film, but it really does have a hopeful current running through all of the bleakness. And I think that's something that resonates with both of us, and you'll see it come up time and time again, is it does have big ideas, but ultimately it is a movie about hope and finding a way forward.
So go check out these movies. They're all worth seeing if you haven't seen them yet. Children of Men is one, again, that is a little lesser seen than some of these other ones. Seek it out for sure. We'll see you next week. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.